this session is Allison Purcell. She'll be discussing biological response to urban gradients in San Jose.
Thank you, and thanks for sticking around through this whole session. Today, I'm going to talk about the biological response of stream invertebrates across a gradient of urbanization. And I'll focus primarily in the watershed surrounding San Jose, California. And then at the end, I'll extend my talk out to different regions within the United States. I'd first like to acknowledge my long list of co-authors because this project was actually a collaboration between many different groups across the country. So Vicky's talk was a great lead-in because I'm focusing on urbanization as well. So why is urbanization important? That's kind of the main question we're starting with. You can see from this nighttime lights photograph of the USA taken in 1995 that the amount of urban land in this country is very extensive. In fact, 76% of the population in the U.S. lives in urban areas, and it's projected that by 2030, 60% of the world's population will also be in urban areas. So not only is urbanization is growing, but it's also extremely pervasive in its impacts on ecological communities. So in looking at in streams and the impacts of urbanization, there's just a really wide list and variety of stressors that you can have in a system. And they range from things like habitat to water quality. They all cumulatively reflect in what we call the biological response. And we'll be using in-stream invertebrates as indicators of water quality in these urban systems. So just to give you an example of what you might find in a sample of the stream invertebrates that we're looking at, in a pristine site, you might find mayflies, which are the Ephemeroptera, stoneflies, Plecoptera, and caddisflies, the Trichoptera, which are collectively known as the EPT. They're generally sensitive orders of insects that are found, you would find them predominantly in these pristine systems. And you would also find a few moderately tolerant things such as dragonflies, beetles, and then a handful of very tolerant midge, which are chironomid fly larvae. Now, in contrast, in an urban or impacted site, your sample would be pretty dominated by tolerant organisms that range from snails to leeches, and again, the midge flies. So as Vicky pointed out, in urban systems, you still will have a lot of organisms. They're just different in terms of their tolerances. And a smaller proportion of these moderately tolerant organisms, and then maybe a small proportion of the EPT. And the reason for this is that there are actually some pretty tolerant families within the EPT. So the research questions that were driving this project were first, what is the biological response along an urban gradient? And secondly, how can this relationship help determine urban stream restoration potential? So within this concept, we are having our urban gradient along the x-axis, and then the biological indicator on the y-axis. And before we started, we weren't sure what this curve was going to look like. Was it going to be a linear response where you just have a decline that's sort of a one-to-one? Or was it something where you get a little bit of urban land and then you have a sharp decline right away? Or is it something where you have a higher threshold and the biological communities stay pretty in good condition until they hit a certain point and then decline? Or does it not look like any of these curves? So that was part of where we were starting in terms of our theoretical framework. So the project that I worked primarily on was located in the Santa Clara Basin, which are the watersheds surrounding the city of San Jose. So we sampled invertebrates at 85 sites on 14 different streams, and we used a DNET sampler. And so you can see I've been doing my PhD a long time, because here I am, 9 years old, I was sampling. So I'm finally getting close to finishing. So we used those as our main data points. And to answer this first axis, we looked at what were the parameters that would really reflect urbanization. So we looked at water, hydrologic indicators, water quality indicators, habitat, landscape, socioeconomic factors. And what it really came down to in the end, and what we used for our final urban gradient, were a combination of these three parameters. The first was, first we would delineate the watershed to our sampling site, for each sampling site, and then determine the percent urban land use, the road density, and the population density within each of those catchments. And so what we did is standardize these on a scale of 0 to 100, and then average them so that we get a single score for each site. And to give you an idea of what this looked like in the Santa Clara Basin, is in San Jose, the area surrounding San Jose, you can see that the land use is primarily this urban, so residential, commercial, and industrial made up our urban land use, and it's pretty concentrated in these lower watersheds around the cities. We had saw a similar pattern with population density and also with road density. So we felt like this was a good way to characterize the urban landscape. So secondly, what do we include in our biological indicator axis? Well, we screened a series of 58 biological metrics, and we looked at range. They need to have sufficient range. We looked at responsiveness to this urban gradient, and we used quantile regression in order to look at that. And lastly, we eliminated any redundant metrics. So if they had a correlation coefficient of 0.7 or higher, we would eliminate the less responsive metric. In addition to those quantitative criteria, we also wanted our biological metrics to be something that was easily measured, calculated, and understood, and already used nationwide by agencies. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel and introduce new concepts that agencies might have trouble, relating to the public in terms of what they mean. And in terms of ecological categories, we decided we wanted a metric within each of these categories, structure, function, and habit, to have a well-rounded picture of that biological response. And so a major criteria was that this biological indicator needed to respond across the entire urban gradient. So if it dropped out too soon, that response was too sensitive, and it wouldn't tell us anything about our highly urbanized sites. So that's really the relationship we were looking for. And our final biological index included EPT richness. So again, these are Ephemeroptera, Plecoptera, and Trichoptera, the number of taxa. And for our functional feeding group, it was shredders turned out to have the best response. So these are organisms that shred up organic matter. You can see this is a stonefly munching on a leaf. And lastly, percent clingers. So the proportion of organisms that cling to the substrate in the stream. And this is what our plot ended up looking like. So you can see that a simple least squares regression line doesn't really characterize this scatter very well. So instead, we used quantile regression to really look at this upper envelope, or the upper boundary of decline that was happening at the top end of the scatter. So we used this to really evaluate what was going on at the upper end of things. And so like I said before, we not only looked in San Jose, but we also compared these exact same methods in Cleveland, Ohio, around the Cuyahoga watershed. You'll remember that was the river that caught on fire, so things are doing a little bit better now, but and also in Baltimore, Maryland. So when we plotted all of these sites on the same plot, they did seem to have a fairly similar response, although you'll notice that San Jose, which is noted in the green dots, is a little less urban than, say, Baltimore or Cleveland. And so those plots tend to be further on the left side. But how can we use this in terms of management? So how can this be a tool for people trying to figure out, how impacted is my site and what can I do about it? Well, one idea is that you might take, say, the 75th quantile, and use that area in between to be sort of a management goal, something that you want your sites to come up to. And you may notice that there are a lot of points down here, which maybe intuitively doesn't make sense at first. So you have a very low level of urbanization and yet a very low biological score. So this might be because there's other influencing factors that aren't taken into our urban gradient parameters, such as agriculture or suburban development, which has lower population density, maybe lower road density, but still can impact sites, or it might be local impacts. So in terms of restoration potential, if you think about a site that's down here and you want to bring it up to your management goal, well, it looks like it has quite a long distance to go. But in comparison, one that's a very highly urbanized site has a relatively shorter distance. When in actuality, the cost to take one of these sites and raise its biological condition might be quite less than in a highly urbanized area because there are so many constraints in a highly urbanized area. As well, we thought that sites that fall really high along this threshold, these can be possibly used as models for restoration. Why are they getting such good scores? You know, what is it about the land use of that area or the site-specific things, and you can kind of use those keys and tools to structure your restoration for the sites that aren't meeting your goal. So in conclusion, our methods can determine if a site, where it falls in terms of its potential, if it's not meeting its potential, but can't pinpoint the specific cause. So it has to be a site-by-site, you know, analysis of what's going on. And it's primarily meant for urban sites because there might be other influences, such as agriculture, that can also impact your sites. So I just want to acknowledge there were also quite a lot of other people that were involved in each of the regions, but I want to in particular thank the Resch Lab, who they've just been wonderful, and my advisor, Vince Resch, as well as my husband, Michael, and my parents, who've been extremely supportive through my PhD. So with that, thank you.
So, using your system, is Strawberry Creek reaching its potential, or is this
more? Strawberry Creek. You should ask an undergrad who worked in our lab. We sampled every 14 days. She had a very good data set. Well, that's actually a good question because, again, you would have to consider what are the things impacting that, you know, the site you're looking at and the landscape. So the restoration that's been done on Strawberry Creek has been very oriented towards water quality, you know, getting all the drains from the labs rerouted so they weren't going and directly into the creek and raw sewage and things like that. So definitely those kinds of things can bring up your biological condition immensely if you don't have raw sewage or different waste, chemical waste going in. So I think Strawberry Creek's doing better than it has in the past, that's for sure.
Taking it to the next step, has there been any sampling after any restoration efforts and see if you get the kind of response you're hoping for?
Well, so another part of my dissertation is looking at exactly that, at sort of reach-scale restorations, doing sampling before and after and seeing how things change. And yes, what we have seen is that actually post-restoration, you do have this initial increase. Obviously, if it was going from being an underground culvert or a cement channel, and now they've put riparian vegetation in, you will get insects recolonizing that area. So that's kind of an extreme condition example. But what we've seen is that over time, we look specifically from 99 to 2007, that there's kind of this leveling off, that there are so many impacts in the urban area that it really can only get up to a certain level. Yeah.
Okay, so cut it off there.